Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, everybody. It's Party Friday. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show, Truth Straight Up. Chuck is on assignment, and since he's not here, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Whenever we say Chuck is on assignment, you can pretty much assume that that means that he's golfing. He's in yet another golf tournament. So he'll be back on Monday. So it's just me today. We've got Patrick Neville coming up. A ton to talk about today. I don't know if you guys were able to see Jim Jordan taking on Dr. Fauci. What a freaking weasel is all I can say about Fauci when you listen to that. We've got Trump on, maybe we should delay the election. Want to get your thoughts on that. Was he trolling? Was he serious? And then the Epstein documents, besides just all the, interesting, shall we say, details on that. One of the things that has come out in the document dump that occurred last night is just how much the FBI knew. Keep in mind, this was the Mueller and the Comey FBI, how much they knew and what they did, and more importantly, what they really didn't do about the whole thing. Hey, want to let you know a couple of things. So number one, I love it when you guys join us on Zoom, and hello to everybody on Zoom. If you ever want to join us on Zoom, you just go to zoom.us, and the meeting number is 209-576-423. That's 209-576-423. 423, and you can just, come on, you can listen, you can kind of be in the waiting room, you can bring up your audio, video there. That looks really cool. Also want to remind you, we have a YouTube channel, Chuck and Julie, Chuck and Julie Show on YouTube. Links to everything is at chuckandjulie.com. And that'll take you everywhere. If you get a chance, so we'd love to have you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter. That's at ChuckandJulie1. And we're also on Parler. And guess what the name of that is? Also Chuck and Julie on Parler. Parler's kind of interesting. Quite as easy to work, and they're not links to it yet. I don't think the mainstream media folks are going to help Parler at all by providing links to it, so it's a little trickier to go ahead and get that. But we're hoping, and if the guys at BBS, if you get a chance to call Patrick, maybe he's not, I know he had not a ton of time today, but we wanted to grab him on for the weekly Minority Report. One of the things that he was proposing, which of course failed, was that they do a special session again to talk about education. You have all of these teachers' unions. And actually, let me clarify. I know a lot of individual teachers. And the individual teachers that I have talked to, I think for the most part, are kind of concerned, but would prefer getting back to the classroom. Wait, what do we say? Okay, beginning, Patrick, thank you. They want to get back to the classroom, in part because they're parents too, many of them, right? It's hard for them to keep their kids' education going online to help other people with their kids' education. And I think they all recognize this is not good for the kids. It isn't a good situation for any of the kids. I know our little guy, Rev, when we were doing the online learning in the spring, and I think any parent out there, a grandparent, anybody who saw this would acknowledge it just didn't work, right? The online learning was a joke. And it's not like anything changed over the summer, right? It's not like all of a sudden, children's personalities, children's developmental stages, everything changed all of a sudden. No. Right? It's going to be the same problems. It's not as if the teachers and the parents got less harried. In fact, I think it's going to be even worse because now you've got parents who are maybe they're not in a lockdown anymore, right? They're trying to work. They're trying to work from home. They're trying to do their own stuff. And I can tell you as a parent, initially I thought, okay, I could set Rev up here with his computer and he could do his thing. And then I could go ahead and do, my work sitting here next to him. Well, you just can't, right? He's a 9-year-old, right? And if you don't supervise him, like I said, pretty soon we realized he was putting his, stuffed animal in front of the camera. And in the meantime, he was, playing dunk with the basketball thing. So we got Patrick on the line now. Patrick Neville, one of the true heroes, one of the Republicans who speaks out and tell us the truth straight up. Hey, Patrick, it's just me today. And I know you don't have a lot of time, but want to say thank you for joining the show and for your time this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, I was just talking about, you had called for a special session to deal with education and what should we do about education, because a lot of the school districts, even though they all kind of acknowledge that it's safe to go back to school, aren't doing it anyway. And the Democrats embraced your idea because they care about kids, right? Is that what the result of that was?
Well, you know, we didn't just call for a special session. And of course, that gets so angry when the way press, you know, spins this, and even Republicans spin it a certain way. What we called for was essentially letting parents take the state share of their per pupil revenue if their schools do not reopen. I think that's a, you know, simple, legitimate step that we could actually take. We're actually having parents have a really difficult time planning on what they're going to do. We can't control everything that each school district does throughout the state. There's hundreds of school districts within the state. And what we can control is what we do with that per pupil revenue.
Right.
And if parents are going to be taking that responsibility on their own, I think we should be giving that per pupil revenue to them directly rather than just the school. I mean, we're at the point now where lots of folks are saying it's safe to open. The districts, and at least where I'm at in Douglas County, for instance, overwhelming response wants the district to open up. I think even the overall staff wanted the district to open up, and they didn't open up. So if that's what's going to be happening, then we should be giving that money straight to the parents and letting them find other alternatives, whether that's homeschool or whatever that is, to actually be able to educate their children. So, you know, if that requires a special session, then okay, let's go into a special session to do that. But the main reason we were calling for is actually giving the parents those tools. And the way to give them those tools is a special session. So unfortunately, the press, you know, ripped it open and said, oh, yeah, we just want a special session. They want a special session. That was really the only talk. There was no details about why we wanted a special session.
Why you wanted it.
My fear is now POLIS is going to come back and call for a special session on some other garbage reason that we don't need one for. And then we're going to actually have to show up. And so we're only calling for that specific reason.
Well, and you know, I was saying before we brought you on, I mean, as a parent, it is number one. Okay, so the first 2 days of online learning at home, Rev broke his Chromebook, right? So we had to get another Chromebook. I was looking online because you're right, it was such a joke. I thought, okay, I need to get some homeschool kind of help here, right? And you can get programs and things that costs money. If I'm trying to work, I have to get some kind of babysitter or somebody to look after him. That costs money. So it's not as if, you know, not going to school is free for parents at all. There's a lot of costs that go into it. And you're right. You know what I suspect though, Patrick, that sound, they're like, oh, holy cow. He's talking about allowing parents to use their own money to make their own educational choices for their kids. And we certainly can't have that. That sort of sounds like a voucher system to me. I mean, that, don't you think, is their underlying problem with it?
Oh yeah. I mean, they're ultimately scared too, because they don't know what's going to happen the way the schools actually currently count. They've got their, you know, there's basically two different count days based on regulations that are issued from the Colorado Department of Education. And so Colorado Department of Education is looking at changing how they do those counts because, well, if the student's not in that seat on that particular day, then guess what? They can't necessarily count it. And so there's a lot of parents, like there's a tremendous amount of parents who've been just fed up with the back and forth of, well, maybe we'll do 2 days a week, which, okay, if you have another job, how do you actually, you know, only send your kid for 2 days a week in school and try to work it all out? So they're fed up, and so they're just, you know, okay, we're going to plan to homeschool ourselves. And quite frankly, the school district that their kids are attending shouldn't receive that revenue if that's the case. So there's a lot going into it and a lot of panic with the schools now going, oh, what do we do if we start losing all this revenue? So they're trying to find backdoor ways to make sure they still get that same amount of revenue without actually opening
teaching
up the schools fully.
Right. Well, yeah. And I know even online, if they say, well, we'll just count the kids online. I know even in my son's school district, where all the kids were pretty much were provided with Chromebooks, right? They all had their own, you know, he would show up and out of maybe, you know, the 30 kids, it'd be maybe 9, 10, maybe 13. I mean, most of the kids, and I think other school districts had the same thing, weren't showing up. Well, I think though, you know, what do you, maybe there's a silver lining in here in that, because I think it might say to parents, hey, wait, you know, you think you have this under control. You think you have some control, and all of a sudden you don't. Somebody somewhere who you didn't vote for, once again, necessarily, is issuing some sort of, you know, decision, and then the school boards have to follow it. And all of a sudden you have school. I know in our school district alone, we have school, we don't have school. Now we have it 2 days, maybe not. The one thing I know is I can't count on any of it, which makes me think, I don't know, Patrick, maybe we should all start like our own school, right? Where we say, hey, we promise to educate your kids and have the traditional school day. I mean, somebody's going to think of that, I hope. And I think the school districts worry about that, or the unions worry about that.
Oh yeah, that's exactly why they're scared of that idea, because they, you know, they can't let the parents actually have control over their schools. I know there's some charter schools that are opening up full-time on a full-time basis. Some, you know, they've got some other things going on, like temperature checks and stuff to be safe. But for the most part, they're opening up, and the school districts don't like that. And so now there's some calls to make sure that charter schools don't get funded equally on a per pupil basis. So I guess if you send your kid to a charter school, your kid's now somewhat is now worth less because they go to a charter school, even though they're going to in-person schooling, and where the other, you know, child may not be. And so it's getting out of hand. And that's what our point is, like, let's put the parents in charge of the resources that we have, at least at the state level. Again, like I said, a lot of the funding in a lot of districts comes from the local level as well. But if we can control the state revenues and where they go, I think it's quite frankly better off in the parents' hands.
All of us having, exactly. Let me, have you been down, what's going on at the Capitol, just sort of switching gears here. Have they cleaned up the Capitol? Have you seen this at all? I mean, you see parts of it look clean, then it looks, you know, a mess again. They moved out the homeless camp. What's the situation down there or up there?
Yeah, it's still a go. They kind of moved part of it out. And then of course, you know, Tay Anderson had his incident, you know, his scheduled press conference immediately after it and everything else that happened. So it seems like that kind of like gave at least the State Patrol pause to, you know, slow down some of their operations to clean it up. But it's gotten somewhat better,
okay,
but still definitely a slow go. And that's because of just sheer political reasons.
Yeah. All right. And listen, I know you have to go. So just a couple of two more questions. One is, you know, we've got some good ballot initiatives that look like they turned in signatures. And just in general, anything else out there? Because I just, you know, love to give you this opportunity. Anything else out there that you think people should be aware about, want us to know about?
Oh, yeah. Those ballot initiatives will be fantastic. So there's a lot of them going on the ballot. Of course, there's going to be some bad things on the ballot, too, so we're going to be careful as conservatives. There's some referred measures that got a lot of Republican support, you know, and got enough at least to get two-thirds out of there. So, like, there's a measure that repeals Gallagher entirely. It will just end up resulting in your property taxes increasing on your personal residences. So those are bad, but the ones that just got, you know, approved, or at least they got the signatures turned in, and the Secretary of State, I assume, will approve the signatures because they turned in enough, is one's a straight lowering the state income tax to, I think, 4.55% from the 4.63 it's at now. So not a huge decrease, but it's a decrease, a straight decrease that we've been calling for a while. Something the Governor Polis has been calling for, too, might I add. So it would be interesting to see if he jumps on board and actually wants people to sign on to that. And the other one is very, very big, and that's basically going to define what a fee is. Folks aren't aware of this, and the Taxpayer Bill of Rights in Colorado, it requires any increase in taxes to go to you, the voter, to approve it. So what the Democrats have done over the past two decades is have conveniently called things fees instead of taxes. So they can just raise fees willy-nilly and call this a fee when it's really a tax. This defines it in our state constitution in a very good way, and says that I think it's over like a five-year period, if it raises more than $100 million over 5 years, then it has to go to the voters. This is critical because I'm telling you, I've seen so many bills down there time and time again where the Democrats say, oh, no, this is a fee, not a tax, which can take more money out of your pocket than the fee. And sometimes it's even like a percentage of the income. Like, seriously. They're doing the family medical leave bill. It was like, oh, we're going to take a percentage of your overall income out of your paycheck. But that's a fee, not a tax. It's insane. It's out of control. So this would actually define it more clearly. So you, the voter, actually get a say on this in the future. And that one's absolutely huge.
I would think, given the fact that people keep voting to keep Tabor around, they keep voting down other taxes, I would think that that people would be like, oh, yeah, I think we should be able to vote on that. So, okay. Well, Patrick, hey, listen, we will let you go. Thank you for your time. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Patrick Neville there, Representative Patrick Neville, one of the good guys. You know, you see that there's some establishment Republicans that want to get a change in leadership, which means no leadership, which means just Democrat light. So I think it's important to give Patrick all the support we can. Okay. Want to switch gears now, and let's open up to the phones. If you want to call in, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. Again, if you want to join Zoom, it's 209-576-423. That's the meeting number. And if you're on Zoom and you want to talk, just kind of unmute yourself and pop in and we'll bring you on. Want to right now though, talk about hypocrisy. It's kind of like, you know, you see the Democrats say and do one thing, but I think Jim Jordan did two examples of hypocrisy I want to talk about. The Jim Jordan / Dr. Fauci weasel hypocrisy that we saw on Capitol Hill today. And then another form of hypocrisy that just really makes me angry. So we have the progressive attorney general. This is why elections have consequences, because I guarantee you if George Brockler had been elected, a Republican, as attorney general, this would not have happened. Attorney General Phil Weiser issuing a cease and desist order to the folks in Weld County who had the rodeo / concert up there, saying they can't do that anymore. The paper had the owner of the business saying, we are just trying to stay alive, okay? We're just trying to stay alive. And Attorney General Weiser said, nope, can't stay alive. We're going to have a cease and desist order. We've been talking on and on about the struggles that Bandimere Speedway has had trying to stay open and stay in business. A couple weekends ago, I know I talked with Tammy Bandimere, and she was saying, you know, we had people were at the gates. We had racers there. We had been negotiating back and forth all day with the Jefferson County Health Department. And she said, whatever it was that we proposed, they just said no. And they'd say, well, you need to do this. So we would send them back another proposal and they'd say, nope, you can't do that either. And she said, finally, it was just apparent no matter what we did, they weren't going to give us permission to open. Well, they negotiated something and they're going to be open a little bit now. But here's the problem though. So if you're a legitimate business, if you're a bar and you want to stay open past 10 o'clock at night, as if somehow you can't get coronavirus in the bar at 9:59, but at 10:01, by God, if you're there, everyone's going to drop dead. The restaurant restrictions, some of the event restrictions, theater restrictions, all of these restrictions on businesses. And every day we see more stories about businesses folding. We can't loosen up on that at all. But if you want to riot, if you want to protest, if you want to burn something down, if you want to spray paint the Capitol, if you want to close down I-225 in the middle of the day, hey, that's cool. No cease and desist order. Now you might say to yourself, well, you know, maybe they don't know who those organizers are. Not true. They do. All of these people post stuff on Facebook and various social media organizations. It is easy if you were the attorney general, just as easy for him to find the owner of Bandimere, just as easy for him to find the owner of the rodeo and the concert. They could find the organizers of the protests and the riots if they wanted to too, and tell them, no, you can't do this. We're going to come in there and we're going to arrest you. We're going to fine you. City of Denver. I mean, what a joke. Mayor Hancock today held a news conference, even though the percentage of cases, and they're testing everybody and they're calling everything a positive test, it's still going down. You notice the media doesn't even talk about deaths anymore, because the death rate, it's the same. I mean, it's the same as a seasonal flu, maybe even better, because it has a very targeted, very specific population that is especially at risk. They don't report that though, but Hancock says, oh, you know, even though when you read the statistics, everything is down, 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 right? There's no surge again. But Hancock says, oh, we don't want there to be a surge. So we're going to increase and up and enhance cracking down on people not wearing masks, even though we all also know the wearing of masks doesn't really work. But bottom line is, so if you're a legitimate business, if you're a bar, if you're this rodeo guy, if you're Bandimere Speedway, and you try to open up and try to do business as usual just to stay alive, they're going to issue a cease and desist order. They're going to threaten to close you down. But if you're a protester, a riot, if you're Tay Anderson, you can, a school board member, you can show up wherever you want, don't have to wear a mask, and nothing happens to you at all. I want to play. So that's the going on here in Colorado. But we saw today on Capitol Hill, Jim Jordan, and thank God for Jim Jordan, was questioning, I guess I use the term loosely, Dr. Fauci. And we're going to play a clip there. And just listen to what a weasel and frankly, what a flat out liar Fauci is. So guys at BBS, if you could play that Jordan Fauci face off. Video.
Virus. I think I can make a general statement.
Well, 500,000 protesters on June 6th alone. Yeah. I'm just asking that number of people does it increase the spread of the virus?
Crowding together, particularly when you're not wearing a mask, contributes to the spread of the virus.
Should we limit the protesting?
I'm not sure what you mean. How do we say limit the protesting?
Should the government limit the protesting?
I don't think that's relevant to.
Well, you just said if it increases the spread of the virus, I'm just asking, should we limit it?
Well, I'm not in a position to determine what the government can do in a forceful way.
Well, you make all kinds of recommendations. You make comments on dating, on baseball, on everything you can imagine. I'm just asking, you just said the protests increase the spread. I'm just asking, should we try to limit the protests?
No, I think I would leave that to people who have more of a position to do that. I can tell you.
Government stopping people from going to church, Dr. Fauci?
Yeah.
Last week in the Calvary Chapel case, 5 liberals on the Supreme Court said it was okay for Nevada to limit church services. Justice Gorsuch said it best. He said there's no world in which the Constitution permits Nevada to favor Caesar's Palace over Calvary Chapel. I'm just asking, is there a world where the Constitution says you can favor one First Amendment liberty protesting over another practicing your faith?
I'm not favoring anybody over anybody. I'm just making a statement that's a broad statement. That avoid crowds of any type, no matter where you are, because that leads to the acquisition and transmission. And I don't judge one crowd versus another crowd. When you're in a crowd, particularly if you're not wearing a mask, that induces the spread.
It's a simple question, doctor. Should we limit the protests? Government is obviously limiting people going to church. And look, there's been no violence that I can see at church. I haven't seen people during a church service go out and harm police officers or burn buildings. But we know that. I mean, for 63 days, 9 weeks, it's been happening in Portland.
Right. Yeah.
Well, one night in Chicago, 49 officers were injured. But no limit to protest. But, boy, you can't go to church on Sunday.
I don't know how many times I can answer that. I'm not going to opine on limiting anything. I'm just going to tell you.
You've opined on a lot of things, Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, but I've never.
This is something that directly impacts the spread of the virus, and I'm asking your position on the protests.
Yeah, I'm not going to opine on limiting anything. I'm telling you what it is, the danger, and you can make your own conclusion about that. You should stay away from crowds. No matter where the crowds
government stopped,
are.
Government has stopped people from going to work. In fact, just in New Jersey 4 days ago, Ian Smith, Frank Trombetta were arrested for opening up, for trying to operate their business, their gym. They were arrested. But my bet is if these two individuals own this gym were outside just in front of their gym, and all the people who were working out in their gym were outside protesting, they'd been just fine. But because they were in the gym working out, actually running their business, they got arrested. You think that's okay?
You know, I'm not going to opine on who gets arrested and who does not. I mean, I you get where I'm going. I'm telling you, as a public health official, I say crowds.
Do you see the inconsistency, though, Dr. Fauci?
There's no inconsistency, Congressman.
So you're allowed to protest millions of people on one day in crowds yelling, screaming, but you try to run your business, you get arrested? And if you stood right outside of that same business and protested, you wouldn't get arrested? You don't see an inconsistency there?
I don't understand what you're asking me as a public health official to opine on who should get arrested or not. That's not my position. You could ask me
You've advocated for certain businesses to be shut down. I'm just asking you on your position on the protest. I haven't seen one. We've heard a lot about hair salons. I haven't seen one hairstylist who, between haircuts, goes out and attacks police or sets something on fire. But we've seen all kinds of that stuff during protests, and we know the protests actually increase the spread of the virus. You've said that.
I said crowds. I didn't say specifically. I didn't say protest do anything.
So the protests don't increase the spread of the virus?
I didn't say that. You're putting words in my mouth.
No, I just want an answer to the question. Do the protests increase the spread of the virus?
I don't have any scientific evidence that anything. I can tell you that crowds are known, particularly when you don't have a mask, to increase the acquisition and transmission. No matter
so
what
you don't have a position on whether the protests increase the spread of the virus or don't increase the spread of the virus.
I'm saying that crowds, wherever the crowds are, can give you an increased probability that there's going to be acquisition and transmission.
But do you understand Americans' concern? Protesting, according, particularly according to the Democrats, is just fine, but you can't go to work, you can't go to school, you can't go to church. There's limits placed on all three of those fundamental activities, First Amendment activities, but protesting is just fine.
What you hear there and you see is Jim Jordan, Fauci, by the way, has, as you said, he has previously said that, you know, these things, you shouldn't go to these things. These people need to wear masks and these things we need to limit, et cetera, et cetera. We need to close down. And then Jim Jordan is like, well, saying, okay, so wouldn't you agree that the protests also are something that maybe we should, you know, take a look at, just like Attorney General Phil Weiser should take a look at him here in Colorado and say, okay, if we're gonna close down concerts and if we're gonna close down Bandamere, if we're gonna close down bars and restaurants, then maybe we should close down and issue the order and make people comply with it when they're at a protest as well. And Fauci wouldn't say no. I mean, you hear what a weasel, right? If you thought in any way, shape, or form, he kept calling himself as a public health official. He's no public health official. He's a weasel, motivated by politics. I think, you know, he's getting paid every day. We've talked about that plenty of times before. And so it's just, I don't know about you, but I get frustrated sitting there listening to him. And thank God for Jim Jordan who exposes it. But, you know, more and more, I'm beginning to think that you know, Karen Cataline is right, that what we really need to do is just have some sort of mass mob kind of situation, a mob in sort of a good way, where we just all show up someplace and don't wear masks because they're not going to crack down. You saw now they're talking about having to wear face shields, right? Like kind of like little welding shields, I guess, only you could see through them. You know, I could see a bunch of kindergartners wearing those, by the way. And they're not going to stop. I think that is what's clear. And you saw Fauci there refuse to say that, okay, a protest is a crowd, and therefore it increases, from his scientific point of view, the odds that somebody could either acquire or transmit coronavirus, or frankly, any other virus, a common cold for that matter. But he wouldn't say it, no matter how hard Jordan pressed him, and no matter how much of a hypocrite Jordan presented him to be, Fauci just kept saying, I don't know why you're asking me that. And as Jordan pointed out, you've had no problem, you know, issuing sort of rules and regulations or calling for them for all kinds of other things. But when it comes to the protest, which leads me to another thing, and, you know, feel free to call and weigh in, 888-627-6008. But it leads me to another thing, and that is you have to ask yourself, why? Why is it that they, because they clearly actually don't care about anyone's health. If they actually cared about people's health, right? Dr. Fauci, if he really believed that people were going to die and drop dead in you know, epidemic, pandemic numbers, he would have kept his mask on at the baseball game, right? He wouldn't have taken his mask off. You could tell he didn't care. Just like the guy who did the original study, right? Who said, oh, all this huge numbers of people are going to die, so we have to lock down the economies around the world, was meanwhile traveling without a mask, violating the lockdown in Great Britain to go see the person he was having an affair with. If he really thought that was a problem, that the virus was a problem, he wouldn't have done that. So you can tell by their actions, they actually don't care. They let the protesters go out because they know. So why are they doing this, you have to say? Why are they trying to force the rest of us to wear the mask? Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. Number one, you have to consider everything, I guess, under the umbrella of Trump politics. When you think orange man bad, we got to do whatever we can to get rid of the orange man, then all of this makes sense. And you can see that's the only thing that matters. The more that they can keep people in fear, right, then the worse it looks for Trump. The more they can keep the economy locked down, the worse it looks for Trump. The more they can keep the schools locked down. I mean, when they keep everything so horrible, people want to change. And their hope is that in November, they'll change and they'll elect Joe Biden. polls are all over the place, and you know, I don't think I, for one, trust them very much. But I think common sense kind of tells you if people are miserable, if parents are struggling at schools, if businesses are closing down, it has an impact on the election. And is it going to be a good impact if you're a Trump supporter or a bad impact? I don't know. But I think that it is in their best interest to create all this. The other thing that it does is it pushes the idea of the all-male ballots. We talked about that a lot on this show. If they have all-male ballots, then the Democrats have an inherent, advantage, a built-in field advantage. They have teachers unions, they have Planned Parenthood, they have environmental organizations, all these organizations that can help them identify their likely voters and get boots on the ground to go get those ballots. They have way less control, and traditionally Republicans do better if people actually go to the polls and vote, or if people have to just turn their ballots in themselves. And again, ask yourself, why is it that they want to allow ballot harvesting? Well, because they know they do it better. So the fear, again, of the coronavirus does that. The other thing it does, it limits Trump's rallies, right? I mean, look what they've already done to the Republican National Convention. It eliminates, and every time he has it, you can see he has a surge of energy. The crowd has a surge of energy. They can't deny that there's a ton of Trump support. So instead, they want to get rid of those, and then they can see Trump. No one would show up to a Trump rally. The other thing they can do, they keep Joe Biden from having to debate, which we all know would be a disaster because it's going to be too dangerous. And then finally, it also gives them an excuse for keeping Joe Biden in his basement. He can't go out and campaign. Because they know that gives Trump an advantage. So the Democrats are going to do everything they can to keep things locked down. And I agree with our friend and columnist, Michael Tao. It's just evil. It's evil that they are willing to risk our kids' education and our kids' mental health well-being. It's evil that they're willing to have businesses closed down. Also that they can make sure that Trump doesn't get reelected and then they can get in power. Because I also think what will happen if they get in power is they're going to do, like we heard Obama talking about, get rid of the filibuster, right? So they can more easily pass things if they have a majority. They just need a majority, not any kind of supermajority. They can also, I think what they'll do is they'll stack the Supreme Court. They'll increase it and then add their people there. I mean, why wait for a Supreme Court justice to die before they can nominate somebody you didn't get them in place? You just add more people, right? And again, you create this whole mail ballot thing. You let people who are here in this country illegally vote. You let people who are convicted felons vote. You do everything you can to increase, you know, the people who are going to vote for you. And it's not necessarily fraud. What they're going to do is they're going to change the rules. And if that happens, I think there will never be another Republican elected anywhere, really. Or if it is, it would have to be such a rhino Republican, it wouldn't make any difference. So there is so much riding on this election, and the coronavirus was like a gift from the gods to the Democrats with this, right? Because the economy was rolling along, Trump was rolling along, and all of a sudden this came, everything came to a crashing halt. People are scared, people are confused. And the mainstream media adds to it. There was another poll, and again, you know, say what you will about polls, but another poll where they asked people what percentage of the American public or the population did they think died as a result of the coronavirus? And people said something like 9%, which would be like 30 million people. So the average person out there who wasn't really paying much attention, but they just did the survey, thought that 30 million people had died of coronavirus. The actual number is something like 150,000, and even that's inflated. So nowhere near that. But you look at that, and you're like, well, of course people are scared. I don't know about you, but I talk to some friends and I have relatives who are really scared. And I have one relative who's like, well, I know all kinds of people who've died of it. And I'm like, well, who? And then she's like, well, you know, and then it was all anecdotal and it was a friend of a friend, right? But that's what people think. And they keep people scared. And the mainstream media constantly pushes this whole, we call it panic porn, right? They want to keep people scared. And again, because they want to stay in power. And if they get in power, I think it'll be a very bad day for Republicans. Let me, though, kind of switch gears here, too. There's so much to talk about today. Switch gears here, too. What do you think about Trump's tweet that maybe we should delay the election, ? You know, sometimes I don't know for sure whether Trump is crazy like a fox, whether he's clever. Is there a strategy? Was he just bored? You know, I don't know. What do you think? 888-627-6008. I never really know for sure what's going on. But I got to say, with this one, this close to the election, with this much on the line, I think that Trump himself is probably not just like laying around in the middle of the night, you know, sort of like crazy texting stuff. I think that this was a definite troll because I think Trump knows that if he says one thing like that drug, right, that a lot of doctors say actually works. And so Trump talks about it and now it's going to kill people, right? We can't possibly take it. So if Trump says maybe we should delay the election, then they're going to say absolutely not. We absolutely cannot delay the election. It's not too dangerous to have the election. Now they want all mail balloting in the election, but they've been pushing this whole crazy talk that somehow, you know, that raising the question, or just raising the question, will Trump refuse to leave the White House? And they all pick up on that, all the mainstream media, and they're talking about that. So I think then Trump trolls them by going ahead and putting out there, you know, should we delay the election? And they all freak out, right? They all totally freak out. And they say, absolutely not. We can't delay the election. We should absolutely go forward with the election. And then Trump is like, okay, I guess we should go forward with the election, but we have to make sure it's legit. That's what I think he was doing there. I don't think, and even Jared Polis is out there today saying, it is absolutely ridiculous to suggest we should delay the election. And again, I think Trump put the question mark there on purpose. Johnny from Denver is calling in. Hey, Johnny, thank you for calling. What do you think of all of this?
Well, I think Trump just likes to pull people's, like, the trigger points.
Yes.
What do they call it with these snowflakes? They have to be in the safe room and If you say a trigger word,
right? Yeah,
they go off. I think that's what he's doing, because me as his supporter, I'm not even thinking. Oh, if they delay it, if they have it into next year, I just know he's just saying that just to trigger them and get people to start, maybe get them to pay attention, maybe.
Right.
You know. But concerning, I was just thinking, like, I have grandkids and I have kids. I was just thinking, like, for so many years, okay, we want to get our kids back in school, but yeah, at the same time, we know that the schools are brainwashing the ones that they can.
Right.
And they have developed what we are seeing out in the streets now. So I'm just thinking, like, okay, even though we couldn't have predicted that something like this would have happened, maybe the teacher union may not be the only game in town, and maybe as Republicans or conservatives, we can develop our own
right
board. Well, I mean, we have
a certain extent, you're right.
Like that.
That's what charter schools are, and they're private schools. But I think you're right, Johnny. I know we were, you know, when we weren't sure, and we still aren't sure what our son's school is going to do. So I've been kind of looking around. I mean, are there any private schools? Are there Catholic schools? Are there other schools that, you know, will guarantee me that they're going to be open? And you know, you start thinking, well, maybe we should do that. And I got to think, if you're Denver Public Schools, I know I have a friend in Denver Public Schools, and first they were going to open, now they're not going to open till October. And he's telling me, he goes, I'm prepared for it to not open till January. And I know they're looking at other options and other schools for their kids, because he's like, we work, you know, he said, I can't not work until January. So I don't know. Do you think it's going to backfire on him?
A lot of the stuff is, and like I said, we won't know the whole picture until November 3rd. And I think it's going to be a landslide as far as, like, Trump getting in there, because I mean, I just know so many, like, other black people that, you know, they won't say it, like, on these shows, and they'll get shouted down if they call, if there's some other black liberal shows, and you call in and you challenge them.
Right.
And right away, they're yelling you down and stuff like that. So I just feel that, you know, it's like playing a poker game. We're keeping our cards close to our chest, and then boom.
Right. I kind of think I think you might be right. I think you might be right there. I hope, at any rate. I mean, I also agree with you. I think Trump was just kind of pushing their trigger points just to see him jump up and down and freak out. And they do it every time, right? It's like that, you know, movie where they would have the little thing. They go, squirrel, and the dogs would all go run after that squirrel, right? And they go, squirrel over here, and they'd all go traipsing or running over there. I think Trump did that just to get that reaction and to force them to say, oh, absolutely not. It's safe enough to hold the election.
Now, also, you haven't covered this point yet.
Okay.
They're working on this stimulus bill, and it's
right,
$200. I'm thinking, like, maybe, I don't know, $400, you think they would agree to something like $400? Is that $200 just too low for Democrats to wrap their heads around, or
yeah,
as far as like something to wreck the you know, the economy?
I tell you what do you think? And other folks, 888-627-6008. I kind of have mixed feelings on that, because I know I've talked to many people, particularly in the restaurant business, right? Or maybe some retail, right? Where they're having trouble getting people to come back to work because they say, hey, look, I can stay home and get this check, right? And so that seems bad to me. And yet on the other hand, I know that there are people who are struggling, and that $600 actually really helps. And then on the other hand, I mean, you look what we're doing to the national debt, and sooner or later, they're going to raise our taxes to start paying that, right? I mean, we know that that's going to happen sooner or later. So to a certain extent—
And our debt, our debt is up to, what, $26 trillion?
It's all the stars in the universe, right? That's how high it is. It's so ridiculous. But sooner or later, that will start to affect things economically sooner or later, right? You add all of the, I mean, when you look at where our taxes go, a certain percentage of it goes to pay down the debt, and then entitlement programs, Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder, Johnny, I mean, to me, in the end, I kind of think at this point, the negatives for continuing that stimulus bill outweigh the positives. And again, I would simply say, hey, the freaking answer is open up the economy and let bars stay open as long as they want, let restaurants open and not have to have just a handful of people in it. That is the real way to get the economy going again, rather than just handing people $600.
By the way, do you think you guys can get like a Trump's like son on your show? Because I know he's going around doing some interviews, because he's about to release another book in August. So is there any way that you guys can
get
him on your show and put a little bug in his ear?
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. And if we get him, Johnny, we'll line you up to ask the first question. How's that?
All right. I appreciate it. All right.
Okay. Hey, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. 888-627-6008. Give a holler if you're listening on Zoom. You can also go ahead and just unmute yourself and listen there. One of the other things I wanted to talk about today, too, because I just am fascinated by this, the ongoing Epstein case. Last night, so kind of overnight, the Justice Department released a slew of the court, I guess, not the Justice Department, but the court released a slew of documents that were from several years ago and that were part of one of the alleged Epstein victims, part of her, it was depositions, part of her testimony and deposition in a civil case against Ghislaine, or however you say her name, Maxwell, right? And in that, Maxwell had fought long and hard to not let that get out, but the court said no, they were going to get it out. And a lot of interesting things in there. One of the things I noticed, seeming that, hypocrisy is kind of the theme of the day here, one of the things I noticed is you not seeing anything about that on CNN, ABC, Politico, some of the very liberal, progressive, I call them anymore, just the corporate media there that are just another arm of the Democrat Party. And the reason you're not is there's some pretty damning information, at least allegations, about Bill Clinton. The young woman says she was 15 at the time that she first was, I guess her words would be, pressured into having sex with Jeffrey Epstein. And she said Bill Clinton was sort of a regular guest and was on the plane that flew to Epstein's island in the Virgin Islands, and said, Clinton was there all the time. And she would talk to Epstein about that. And Epstein would sort of chuckle and say, well, he owes me a favor, although she didn't say what that favor was. But she talked about Bill Clinton being there. She was underage at the time. She talked about Maxwell being there. And then she said two other girls from New York, or she called them young girls from New York. Clinton has been denying this all along. No, fine. I think he said, well, maybe I might've been on the plane when the flight logs came out, but pretty damning testimony. Who knows if it's true or not, but certainly pretty damning. And I think, you're not seeing anything on that and some of the mainstream, Democrat arm of the media. Alan Dershowitz's name. I like Alan Dershowitz, but his name is brought up again. He, of course, adamantly denies anything, but this girl said, no, this happened there. Prince Andrew, of course, you know, that's all up there again. And she lists names of people. Some of it's redacted, but some of it is not. And it's pretty damning evidence that there were certainly a lot of rich, powerful people, all of whom are supporters and or directly involved, directly or indirectly, with the Democrat Party, all of whom, according to this young woman, or young woman at the time, were partying with Epstein and were participating. She said they had, and sorry, this is, you know, not really family radio here, but she talked about on this island, they had constant orgies. They had orgies on the plane. They had orgies on the island. They had cabanas set up at various, you know, various cabanas on the island, and there would be orgies there. I mean, that was the point of the island. So when Bill Clinton tries to play it off as, oh, you know, we were enjoying the surf and the sun, not really. You know, I don't think certain parts of him were not getting suntanned or sunburned, I can tell you that. The other thing that is interesting about that whole situation is it's clear that the Comey/Mueller, first Mueller, then Comey FBI, was very much aware of these allegations. I mean, that's clear that this girl, this young woman, other young women had gone to the FBI. Apparently, we've all seen that picture of Prince Andrew with his arm around the girl, right? Well, the FBI had that years before that ever got released. So the FBI had all of these allegations allegations involving Epstein and powerful people, either directly or indirectly connected to the Democrat Party, and did nothing with it. I mean, absolutely nothing. Now, they were forced to at some point, and you know, the state of Florida did stuff, but it looks as if they had all of this for a long time and didn't do anything with it, which, you know, again, the fact that the FBI and the Justice Department are corrupt, I don't think should necessarily shock anybody anymore. But, you know, to me, when you're talking about sex trafficking and when you're talking about sexual assault of girls who are too young to be able to legally consent to having sex with an adult, older man, this is just clearly predator behavior. Yes, what they did with the Russiagate stuff and the whole spy hoax there, that is corrupt and horrible and hopefully will be punished someday. But that's political, right? And it's bad enough. I mean, what they did to try to over the president, I don't mean to make light of that. But here we're talking about adults sexually preying on young girls. And the FBI knew it and allowed it. To me, at least did not step in, did not investigate, didn't do anything about it. And you can tell they didn't do anything about it because there's nothing that says, hey, we investigated her claims and we found them to be totally not true, right? That would have come out by now if there had been an investigation into her claims. Didn't happen. Instead, the FBI just looked at this and then looked the other way. They let this continue to go on involving young girls. And you got to wonder, okay, so if they did it there, where else do they do it? And that to me is particularly atrocious, that they were allowing, you know, on the one hand, they have their task forces to crack down on internet porn and you know, internet sex trafficking, things like that. They have all these task forces, but here you had somebody come, present them with evidence, say, I'm a witness, I'll tell you all about it. And they did absolutely nothing. And while they were doing nothing, it continued. Like I said, that to me is a level of corruption and I don't know. It's just astonishing. And that, I think, also deserves a term evil. It's evil what they tried to do to President Trump, but it's also evil what they allowed powerful, politically connected or politically involved rich people allegedly to do. And the fact, you know, maybe they would have investigated it and it would have turned out that there was nothing there. But the fact that they didn't do anything about it to me is particularly atrocious. 888-627-6008 if you want to weigh in. 888-627-6008 or unmute yourself. Other things I wanted to talk about too. Tay Anderson. The politics, so Tay Anderson is a Denver Public School Board member who basically has been all over the place, right? He's 21 years old, and he's become an activist. And he was at the Glendale City Council calling because Glendale was initially, they were going to, what they did is they adopted Denver's social distancing and mask rules, but they didn't adopt the Tri-County Health Department's because it made more sense for them. But he was there with some other activists trying and now calling for, you know, a recall election of the city council and the mayor of Glendale. Now, keep in mind, he's a Denver Public School Board member, doesn't live in Glendale, probably never been to Glendale City Hall before, but now suddenly he's calling for them to be recalled. He's trying to recall the folks in Greenwood Village because he doesn't like the fact that they wanted to indemnify police officers after that new law was passed, calling on Mike Kaufman and Aurora to be recalled because he didn't like the way the police responded to some of the riots out there. And then his latest thing, so he's at this, the State Patrol, and we played this on the show Monday, the State Patrol, or Wednesday rather, the State Patrol is trying to clear out, Denver police clear out this homeless tent city in front of the Capitol, right? Keep in mind, all the homeless people left and they were just fine. Homeless people, peaceful, they left, right? Services were provided if they wanted to, they could take their stuff someplace. But then a group of activists, including Tay Anderson, show up and they block the exit and the entrance. So they block the State Patrol people and the health department people from doing their job. In the ensuing scuffle, as the police kind of try to push to open it, right, Tay Anderson falls. Now, was he pushed? Did he just fall? I don't know. You know, all we know is Tay Anderson very dramatically is crying, posting pictures of himself in the hospital. Suddenly there's a $10,000 GoFundMe page that's set up for him. And then he turns around and he starts calling for Mayor Michael Hancock to resign. Now, keep in mind, when Mayor Hancock was first brought into office or first elected to office, Tay Anderson was like literally 9 years old, right? I mean, he was a pre-teenager. And all of a sudden now he's calling on Michael Hancock to resign. And he's claiming that, you know, the cops pushed him. He's hired a lawyer. So he's going to file a lawsuit against the police department. Maybe he can have a GoFundMe page for that too. And the video, and he claims that he was there trying to help negotiate because he's just the peacemaker, Tay Anderson. He's trying to help negotiate between the activists and the State Patrol. But you look at the video, he's not. He's just holding his cell phone up the whole time. He's just taping it, right? And then not wearing a mask, by the way, in portions of it. And then he turns around and gets knocked down. What I find really interesting is what is the backstory, or as we like to say, the truth straight up about Tay Anderson. Why is this 21-year-old kid suddenly come from nowhere, gets elected to the Denver School Board, right? And all of a sudden now is roaming around the entire metro area, getting involved in all kinds of things that really are none of his business as a public school board member, but using his platform as a public school board member to get himself in all kinds of news media organizations, right? I mean, if he were just some other guy, no one would be paying attention. The reason they're paying attention, because he's a Denver school board member. And keep in mind, Denver school board members, you know, that's a very, more than most places, it's like any big city, frankly, but more than like in a suburb, the school board, those are very political positions that often lead to other, you know, it's a stepping stone for a political career. So I think, and this is my suspicion, if you want to call it that, Tay Anderson, somebody's backing him, right? He doesn't have a job, right? He had to set up this, well, I guess other people set up the GoFundMe page for $10,000. He had to, I don't even know what, he wasn't particularly, we never saw any injuries. I don't know what his $10,000 bill was, but he's raising money for that. Normally in Denver, the city is controlled largely, the politicians, by the developers, right? And the Brownstein Law Firm. I don't really see the Brownstein Law Firm being strong Tay Anderson supporters, particularly since he's going around calling for Mayor Hancock to resign. But Tay Anderson, I think, is a bright kid. And I don't think Tay Anderson decided to take on Mayor Hancock in that way and to call him out in that way and to file a lawsuit against the city without somebody supporting him. And I wonder if there is maybe a shift going on in some of the politics in Denver that suddenly, you know, where Mayor Hancock is not progressive enough, or his administration is not progressive enough at all. And so all of a sudden you've got Tay Anderson is now going to be, you know, sort of the face of the rising Democrat Party. And he's flat out said, he was at the Glendale City Council meeting and somebody said, well, you're not mayor of Denver. And he said, not yet, right? Tay Anderson, I guarantee you. And he's, maybe he's just cocky and pushy, but I don't think so. I mean, I think somebody is funding him. Somebody's clearly supporting him. And, you know, maybe between now and the next show, I'll do some digging and see if we can figure out who and why. But I think it is a scary sign. If you're a Denver resident, okay, all Michael Hancock has done is try to destroy nice and decent neighborhoods and parks, right? But he has some common sense when it comes to businesses and things going on business-wise in Denver, right? Because of the developers. Tay Anderson doesn't care. Tay Anderson, you know, he's, you know, got rid of the police in the Denver Public Schools, is saying, nope, Denver Public Schools shouldn't go back. He wants every mayor in the metro area to be resigned or recalled. He wants to be mayor. He's very radical, very progressive. You know, rather than taking care of the homeless tents and the homeless encampment outside of Maury Middle School, which you could see him doing, right? I got to imagine that something insane is going on with Tay Anderson. And I just think there's a shift in the politics there that are very interesting. I see, is Karen Cataline, are you there? I'd love to have you kind of weigh in on all this stuff we're talking about. I don't know if you're just in the waiting room. Karen, if you can hear me, when you get there, go ahead and unmute yourself and come on in. Although we only have a couple minutes left. So let me remind folks, the show brought to you by ColoradoCitizenPress.com, Colorado's conservative voice. Go there all the time. They always bring up interesting stories, the truth straight up, stories you're going to see from a conservative point of view. Also, Senegenix, as I said, Chuck is on assignment, which could involve golfing today. But DenverSenegenix.com, 720-387-3681. They can do this total, I guess, health overhaul, assessment and overhaul for you, Dr. Julie McCallum. And I've watched it change Chuck's life and Peter Boyle's life. And I guarantee you it would change your life as well. Okay, but there you are. Hey, Karen, if you want to weigh in, I'd love to help you promote your show and you can weigh in. I know if you join, you must have something to say. We got about 2 minutes left, but welcome to the show on a Party Friday.
Oh, it's great to talk to you.
Hey, Karen, if you want to weigh in, I'd love to help you promote.
We got a delay here. Second.
Wait, and I know if you have something to say. We got about 2 minutes left. But,
that's weird.
Welcome to the show on a Party Friday.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's great to talk to you.
You know what?
I'm not able to.
Okay. All right.
I do have stuff to say. I'll tell you one thing real quick. And I've got And that is Tay Anderson, I believe, is a member of the Communist Party USA.
I think, okay, call back on Monday because I want to look into this because I think you could be right. I think you could be right there. All right, thank you. All right, hey, that'll do it for today. I want to thank everybody, Johnny for calling in, Patrick Neville, Karen, everybody on Zoom. Remember, you can get the podcast at chuckandjulie.com. That'll link you to everywhere you need to go. Thank you once again to the folks at BBS, Don, Doug, and Thomas. Everyone have a great Party Friday afternoon, and we'll see you on Monday. On Monday, we have Dr. Brian Junedep coming on. He always has great insights on this whole, you know, panic porn and the coronavirus stuff, so you want to tune in for that. But that'll do it for us today.